ॐ ज्ञानतमेनन्दस्य अर्जुनाञ्जनशलकाय चक्षुसुदृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोविष्टां स्थापितां येन बुद्धिदे स्वयं विभगदमयं ददति सर्वदर्शिकम् वंशकौपतुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यः च श्रीतरं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. That God has completed instructing Maharaj Rahugana. Maharaj Rahugana has had his ignorance removed. And then after instructing Maharaj Rahugana, after hearing these instructions, Prickett Maharaj asks Sukadev Goswami about those instructions and to explain them, which were given allegorically, metaphorically to the king Rahugana. Please explain those, he asked. Prickett Maharaj asked in a very direct way. So this chapter, the 14th chapter of the 5th canto, is called The Forest of Enjoyment. Why? Because in the allegorical story that Jadbara told, he likened the living entity. No, don't need it. He likened the living entities going into the material world to a merchant going into the forest to get something. In other words, when the merchant goes to the forest to find something to sell, to make some profit on, he's interested in exploiting, enjoying. But rather than successfully enjoying due to his labors, the result is just simply suffering. So similarly, the living entity who comes into the material world filled with unlimited, varied plans, how he's going to enjoy, if he's able to do this, if he's able to do that, when he does that, always in the future. The present is suffering, or just tinged with some pleasure, which gives a rise to simultaneously the hope and taste for more pleasure, and simultaneously at the same time the fear that the pleasure won't actually be realized and he'll lose what he has. So desire and fear combine together to produce anxiety. So although in the previous chapter, Dadbharat has explained these same points in the form of an allegory to Maharaj Rahugana, and in Prabhupada's purport, he's described these already. The purport has actually gone over these points here in this chapter. The verses and Prabhupada's purports will go over them in still more detail. And what Prabhupada will do very strongly is criticize the material world. Now why is the material world criticized? It's not actually the material world that's criticized, but the attitude of man that turns a world into a material world. That is so strongly, heavily criticized in this chapter. Why? Because within our hearts, within the hearts of every conditioned soul in the material world, is a desire to enjoy, thinking as the merchant who is going into the forest, as he thinks, yes, if I can just make this arrangement, I will really be happy. So similarly, every one of us has a similar mentality at the core of our heart. This is called ahankar. Ahankara vamudhatma. And we try to be the kartas, the doers, and manipulate the material energy for our pleasure. And the result is miserable. So we need to hear about this. Why? Because a detachment and renunciation needs to awaken in our heart if we wish to actually advance in Krishna consciousness, because the desire to enjoy the material world cannot exist simultaneously with the desire to serve Krishna purely. The two cannot exist simultaneously any more than we can have sour sugar or salty sugar. Contradictory, in Prabhupada's words, sense gratification and Krishna consciousness go ill together. So to awaken more and more detachment within our heart, renunciation and detachment, we are to hear these things. And the idea is that we should give up our hope. The hope that somehow remains always a little alive in our mind, that only if I just get this or remove that, then everything will work out for me. I just have to make this manipulation and arrangement, then it will all... It's just coming, just around the corner. And it remains around the corner until the moment we die, and then we are awakened to reality and terror enters our mind. And what is the reality that we awaken to? That we've just wasted our whole life searching for an illusion, a phantasmagoria. We've chased our tails like a dog chasing his tail, just round and round in circles. So here are the words of Sukadev. Let's read parts of Prabhupada's purports. When King Parikit asked Sukadev Goswami about the direct meaning of the material forest, Sukadev Goswami replied as follows. So Sutta is narrating this to the sages of Namasharanya. My dear king, a man belonging to the mercantile community, the vanik, is always interested in earning money. That's his mentality, is it? As part of an integral part of his mind. Sometimes he enters the forest to acquire some cheap commodities like wood and earth and sell them in the city at a good price. Similarly, the conditioned soul, being greedy, enters this material world for some material profit. Gradually, he enters the deepest part of the forest, not really knowing how to get out. This is our situation. We're deep within the forest of the material world, and we don't know how to get out. We are stuck, we are caught, we are trapped, we are lost. Having entered the material world, the pure soul becomes conditioned. What does conditioned mean? It means limited and controlled. He becomes conditioned by the material atmosphere, which is created by the external energy under the control of Vishnu. We are placed like within the prison house of the material world. Thus the living entity comes under the control of the external energy, Devi Maya. Living independently and bewildered in the forest, he does not attain the association of devotees who are always engaged in the service of the Lord. His taste is different. His taste is different, and therefore he'll fear the devotees. The devotees who preach strongly, no, this material world is useless. We have to get out of the material world. Our home is not here. He fears them. He doesn't like to see them, because they're the antithesis, the opposite of everything that he is longing for. So he does not attain the association of devotees who are always engaged in the service of the Lord. Once in the bodily conception, he gets different types of bodies, one after another, under the influence of material energy and impelled by the modes of material nature, sattva-gun, rajagun, and tamagun. Impelled. What does impelled mean? A little stronger than drawn towards. Forced. There's an when you're impelled to do something, you're forced to do it. There's an inward force. You're impelled. We're impelled. So who is forcing us? What is forcing us? Atakino priyaktoyam papam chariti purusha anicca api vachna baladi vinayojita. Arjuna asks this question. What forces a man to act even against his will? Sometimes we don't want to do something even improper, but we're forced, impelled. And Krishna's answer is clear. Kama isha, krodha isha, rajaguna samudbala. We are forced, impelled, balad even ayojita. That forced is known as rajagun, the mode of passion. Kama, desire. Krodha, turning into anger. Mahashano, mahapapma. They cause the sin in this world. And yet, although we're impelled by something other than us, we have to suffer due to our enjoying spirit. We are the ones. One would think, well, if the thing that's impelling me, he's the one doing it, so he should suffer. But no, it doesn't work like that. It is due to our desires that the material nature acts on us. And therefore, it is due to our desiring, our misuse of our desires, of our proper desiring, our independent desiring that we suffer. In this way, the conditioned soul goes sometimes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to the earthly planets, and sometimes to the lower planets and lower species. Thus, he suffers continuously due to different types of bodies. These sufferings and pains are sometimes mixed. Sometimes they are very severe. Sometimes they are not. These bodily conditions are acquired due to the conditioned soul's mental speculation. What's his mental speculation? His attempts, his speculative attempts, imaginative attempts, how he's going to be happy. He uses his mind in five senses to acquire knowledge, and these bring about the different bodies and different conditions. Using the senses under the control of the external energy Maya, the living entity suffers the material conditions of material existence. He is actually searching for relief, but he is generally baffled. So he's describing what it's like to be in the forest of the material energy. It is very cold and dangerous there, and there is much suffering, and things are very much out of our control. He is generally baffled, although sometimes he is relieved after great difficulty. Struggling for existence in this way, he cannot get the shelter of pure devotees who are like bumblebees engaged in the loving service of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The most important information in this verse is Hari Guru Charana Aravinda Madhukara Anupadavim. In this material world, the conditioned souls are baffled by their activities. What does baffled mean? Confused and bewildered. It's their own activities that confuse them and bewilder them. And sometimes they're relieved from their confusion and bewilderment after great difficulty. On the whole, the conditioned soul is never happy. He simply struggles for existence. Actually, his only business is to accept the spiritual master, the Guru, and through him he must accept the lotus feet of the Lord. That is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru Krishna Prasad Pai, Bhakti Lata Bij. People struggling for existence in the forests or cities of the material world are not actually enjoying life. Now, this, to understand this, to become convinced of this point, is, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur states, that to be convinced that it's not possible actually to be happy in the material world is the greatest step, he calls it, towards Krishna and God realization. So this chapter is very stark and strong, attempting to convince us very deeply that no matter what we do, no matter which dream we have that we fulfill, we will still be baffled and miserable and confused. So no one is actually enjoying life, whether one is in the city or in the forest. They're simply suffering different pains and pleasures, generally pains that are always inauspicious. They try to gain release from these pains, but they cannot due to ignorance. For them it is stated in the Vedas, tad vigyanartam sa gurum eva vigatchet. When the living entity is lost in the forest of the material world, in the struggle for existence, his first business is to find a bona fide guru who is always engaged at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. After all, if he is at all eager to be relieved of the struggle for existence, he must find a bona fide guru and take instructions at his lotus feet, and this way he can get out of the struggle. Remember the analogy, he's in the forest of the material world and he's lost and confused. He's trying to find something of value to squeeze pleasure at in that forest, but actually he's lost and cannot get out and he's suffering. So therefore, clearly when one is lost, one can't expect just to wander out. One needs to be found and guided out. And for that purpose, the recommendation here is to accept the guru, and he says, go this way and this way, do this and that and that, and don't do that and don't do that and do this. And thereby, one escapes this forest. Since the material world is compared here into a forest, it may be argued that in Kali Yuga, modern civilization is mainly situated in the cities. A great city, however, is like a great forest, a jungle. Actually, city life is more dangerous than life in the forests. If one enters an unknown city without friend or shelter, living in that city is more difficult than living in a forest. There are many big cities all over the surface of the globe, and wherever one looks, he sees the struggle for existence going on 24 hours a day. People rush about in cars, going 70 and 80 miles an hour, constantly coming and going, and this sets the scene of the great struggle for existence. One has to rise early in the morning and travel in that car at breakneck speed. Now, people who walk, if they have an accident, they don't break their necks because they're going at a reasonable speed. But in a car, so dangerous, the speed is even called breakneck speed. How dangerous it is. But that's an accepted part of life. But it's dangerous, so dangerous. So the city is so dangerous. Now there's the first danger. Not only are you in danger when you're in the car, and it's not that accidents don't happen. Every day there are tens and tens of accidents in the city. You see it. Anywhere you walk and drive, you almost always you'll see some broken glass in the road. There is always the danger of an accident. Even walking across the street is dangerous. And one has to take great care. In his automobile, the living entity is full of anxieties, and his struggle is not at all auspicious. Apart from human beings, other species like cats and dogs are also struggling very hard and day and night for existence. Thus the struggle for existence continues. And the conditioned soul changes from one position to another, thinking that, oh, this situation will be better for me, let me do this. And this situation would be better. And if I have that, let me accumulate, let me remove. Struggling for existence, seeking some happiness, but actually achieving misery. For a while he's a child, but he has to become a boy. From a boy, he has to change into a youth. And from youth to manhood and old age. Finally, when the body is no longer workable, he has to accept a new body in a different species, all the same species. But death is inevitable, as sure as death. Time and tide wait for no man. Time is relentless, it crushes, it moves us forward, it shakes us, it rattles us, it rolls us. So giving up the body, inevitably, and it happens to everyone, is an opportunity, giving up the body is called death, and accepting another body is called birth. The human form is an opportunity to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, and through him, the Supreme Lord. This Krishna consciousness movement has been started to give an opportunity to all the members of human society who are misled by foolish leaders. How do the foolish leaders lead us? They confuse us. They add to the confusion due to their ignorance. They mislead us as to what the purpose of life is. Generally, nowadays, everyone accepts that economic development and sense gratification is the goal of life. Not spiritual realization. Even if people are leaders are somewhat religious, it's a small cosmetic part of their life. But human life actually has a different purpose: to get out of this forest altogether, and to help people who are misled and confused and lost get out. Is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement that Prabhupada has started. No one can get out of this struggle for existence, which is full of miseries, without accepting a pure devotee of the Lord. The material attempt changes from one position to another, and no one actually gains relief from the struggle for existence. The only resort is the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, and through him, the two lotus feet of the Lord. So he's entered the forest, seeking something that will bring him happiness, something to sell which he imagines will bring him happiness. In the forest of material existence, this is text 2, that was a long text 1. In the forest of material existence, the uncontrolled senses are like plunderers. Why are they like plunderers? They take everything from us, our time, our money, our lifespan, our energy. The conditioned soul may earn some money for the advancement of Krishna consciousness, but unfortunately the uncontrolled senses plunder his money through sense gratification. The senses are plunderers because they make one spend one's money unnecessarily for seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, hearing, desiring, and willing. So he's working so hard to get some money, and the purpose of that money should be to help him get out of the forest, to bring his real happiness. But instead, the senses, under the control of the modes of material nature, force him. We think we're choosing to spend our money. in these sense gratificatory ways, but actually we're being forced by the illusory energy. In this way, the conditioned soul is obliged to gratify his senses, and thus all his money is spent. So that money, because he's in the forest, can be used. He's working hard to get the money, so that should be used to get him out of the forest. But instead it entangles him. It's plundered. And he has to get more, and he has to stay in the forest to get more. So everything is lost in this way. This money is actually acquired for the execution of religious principles, but it is taken away by the plundering senses. So one, obviously, Prabhupada's making the point, one shouldn't allow his hard-earned money to be plundered. It should be used in the proper way to get us, to help our great escape from the material world, the forest of material energy. Prabhupada's purport about in the middle. This Krishna consciousness movement is therefore teaching people to control the mind and five knowledge acquiring senses by a definite process. One should practice a little austerity, and here's the process that he's saying. One should practice a little austerity and not spend money on anything other than the regulative life of devotional service. The senses demand that one see beautiful things. Therefore, money should be spent for decorating the deity in the temple. Similarly, the tongue has to taste good food, which should be bought and offered to the deity. The nose can be utilized in smelling the flowers offered to the deity, and hearing can be utilized by listening to the vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra. In this way, the senses can be regulated and utilized to advance in Krishna consciousness, to escape the forest. Thus, a good position might not be spoiled by material sense gratification in the form of illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. So those are the antithesis of spiritual life. They're just opposite of spiritual life. They entangle us, get us further lost by depleting our energy and our money and wasting what we already have. They entangle us further, get us, throw us deeper into the forest. One spoils an opulent position in the material world by driving cars, spending time in nightclubs, or tasting abominable food in restaurants. And the food is abominable. We could mention some of the abominable things, but it's even abominable to mention it. But they're abominable. The things people eat are incredible. What people think, they call it exotic. Exotic foods. I guess they call it exotic foods because if they called it abominable foods, it wouldn't attract too many people into the restaurant. Just imagine abominable foods. But it is abominable. In these ways, the plundering senses take away all the assets that the conditioned soul has acquired with great difficulty. 3. More criticism. First, how people spend their money. My dear King, family members in this material world go on under the names of wife and children, but actually they behave like tigers and jackals. A herdsman tries to protect his sheep to the best of his ability, but the tigers and foxes take them away by force. Similarly, although a miserly man wants to guard his money very carefully, his family members take away all the assets, his assets forcibly, even though he is very vigilant. Every year, text 4, the plowman plows over his grain field, completely uprooting all weeds. Nonetheless, the seeds lie there, and not being completely burned, again come up with the plants sown in the field. Even after being plowed under, the weeds come up densely. Similarly, the grihastha ashram, family life, Family life is completely a field of fruitive activities. Unless the desire to enjoy family life is completely burned out, it grows up again and again. Even after one suffering circumstance, one enters into it again. This time I'll be happy. This time I've got the right choice. So it is compared to these weed seeds, that desire, because after all, it's a selfish desire to enjoy sense gratification and to expand one's selfishness within the material world. So it cannot be happy in that way. Even though camphor, so the point, unless the desire to enjoy family life is completely burned out, it grows up again and again. So how is it completely burned out? By either getting married or not getting married, but understanding deeply in Krishna consciousness that there is no satisfaction for the soul. It is impossible for the soul to be happy in this way, because the soul and the material body, they are incompatible in a sense. The soul longs for eternity and the material body is stuck in the temporary. The pleasures that begin and end, incompatible. The soul does not get touched by the pleasures of the senses. It longs for something on a completely different level. So here it's pointing to the total removal of the desire that if I become married, then I'll be happy. So very, 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 very strong anti-anything material preaching here. Because if the hope still remains in the heart, then we have to enter material life again and again and again. Even though camphor may be removed from a pot, the pot nonetheless retains the aroma of camphor. As long as the seeds of desire are not destroyed, fruit of activities are not destroyed. So how to remove the very seed of desire to enjoy material life? That will actually be discussed at the beginning of the next canto. Because suffering itself doesn't remove the seeds of the desire. The hope always remains. Only deep, pure devotional service, happiness on a completely different level, removes material desires. Purport. Unless one's desires are completely transferred to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the desire for family life continues, even after one has taken sannyas. Sometimes in our society, ISKCON, a person out of sentiment may take sannyas, but because his desires are not burned completely, he again takes to family life, even at the risk of losing his prestige and disgracing his good name. So we've seen. These strong desires can be burned out completely when one fully engages in the service of the Lord in devotional service. Text 5. Sometimes the conditioned soul and household life begin being attached to material wealth and possessions is disturbed by gadflies and mosquitoes, and sometimes locusts, birds of prey, and rats give him trouble. All these just disturb. Nonetheless, he still wanders down the path of material existence. Due to ignorance, he becomes lusty and engages in fruitive activities. Because his mind is absorbed in these activities, he sees the material world as permanent. Although it is temporary, like a phantasmagoria, a house in the sky. So it is an illusion due to the depth of illusion, and the desire to enjoy the material world appears to be permanent to us, and we don't see its true nature. Sometimes in this house in the sky, Gandhavapura, something that doesn't exist, in other words. Imagine he sees something, but it actually doesn't exist. So sometimes in this house in the sky, the conditioned soul drinks, eats, and has sex. Being overly attached, he chases after the objects of the senses, just as a deer chases a mirage in the desert. So here Prabhupada will explain the analogy of the deer chasing a mirage in the desert. Now we can imagine what will happen to the deer. He's thirsty, he sees, there's a particular phenomena that the clouds, you also see this on a hot day on a road. It appears that there's water on the road. You've seen that when you're driving along? So similarly, sometimes it appears that there's water in the desert, a mirage. It's a reflection of the clouds, something like that, upon the desert. So if we seek the water in the desert, it always eludes us, and what is the result? We die. We die of thirst and dehydration. Prabhupada's purport to text 6. There are two worlds, the spiritual and the material. The material world is false, like a mirage in the desert. In the desert, animals think they see water, but actually there is none. Similarly, those who are animalistic try to find peace within the desert of material life. So it's a forest, a dense, dangerous, jungle-like forest, or it's a desert. It is repeatedly said in different shastras that there is no pleasure in this material world. So, are we convinced about that actually? Because as long as we are not convinced about that, our ability to make advancement in Krishna consciousness is more or less nil. So we can become convinced by hearing about it, about the nature of the material world. We can become convinced by reading the newspaper, by opening our eyes and watching what's going around, imagining if I was in that situation. Or we could become convinced by direct experience. We can go and try if we want to be happy in the material world. If we think it's possible that we can do it, we can try. But it is not recommended to take that option. Why? Because we'll try and try and try, and we'll hope and hope and hope that the happiness is around the corner. It's just over there. True love is awaiting me. That love and that situation that will satisfy the longing and emptiness in my heart, it is just over there. Someone else has it, I don't. And we'll be chasing that like the animal chases the water, the mirage of water in the desert. And then one day we'll awaken and we'll look in the mirror and we'll say, oh no, who is that staring at me? Who is that old fellow? And we'll find that every part of our body is aching, and we will have wasted our life, basically. Janya shunya bisha kaino, having drunk poison, knowingly, willingly, happily, we've killed ourselves, wasted our life. So it is recommended that we see ahead with our intelligence, or accept the verdict of Shastra and holy people, or see ahead with our intelligence and not waste our life. Those who are animalistic try to find peace within the desert of material life. It is repeatedly said in different Shastras that there is no pleasure in this material world. The Shastra says it experiences, experience teaches, and yet we long for it. This is Maya. Furthermore, even if we agree to live without pleasure, so even if someone accepts, okay, there's no pleasure in the material world, okay, I'm just going to live here anyway, pleasureless, but satisfied in my pleasureness, pleasurelessness. I'll just understand that's the nature of the material world and just be satisfied. But still, Prabhupada explains, even if we think like that, we are not allowed to do so. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that the material world is not only full of misery, dukalayam, but also temporary, shashvatam. So we cannot even stay here, even if we accept the material world as it is and decide that we like it so much, misery and all. We want to stay here, but we will be kicked out. Even if we want to live here amid miseries, material nature will not allow us to do so. It will oblige us to change bodies and enter another atmosphere full of material conditions. Text 7. Sometimes the living entity is interested in the yellow stool known as gold and runs after it. But that gold is the source of material opulence and envy. And it can enable one to afford illicit sex, gambling, meat-eating, and intoxication. Those whose minds are overcome by the motive passion are attracted by the color of gold, just as a man suffering from cold in the forest runs after a phosphorescent light in a marshy land, considering it to be fire. We'll read part of Prabhupada's purport. Prickett Maharaj told Kali Yuga to leave his kingdom immediately and reside in four places: brothels, liquor shops, slaughterhouses, and gambling casinos. However, Kali Yuga requested him to give him only one place where these four places are included, and Prickett Maharaj gave him the place where gold is stored. Gold encompasses the four principles of sin, and therefore, according to spiritual life, gold should be avoided as far as possible. If there is gold, there is certainly illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication. Because people in the Western world have a great deal of gold, they are victims of these four sins. There's a story that when Haridas Thakur was put into prison, He taught all the prisoners how to chant Hare Krishna. And they asked him for the benediction, "Please, by your grace, let us get out." And he benedicted them that they should stay in prison, because there was no sense gratification in prison. And if they were out, they'd get themselves in more trouble and engage in sinful life. So being poor is torture. But at least one has lesser capacity to commit sinful activities. But unfortunately, the other side is also true, that poverty brings out the worst qualities of man, and therefore people who are poor can easily fall into by hook or by crook getting money and stealing and say, or whatever. Text 8. Sometimes, why? Because not accepting one's fate. Sometimes the conditioned soul is absorbed in finding residential quarters or apartments and getting supply of water and riches to maintain his body. Absorbed in acquiring a variety of necessities, he forgets everything and perpetually runs around the forest of material existence. So, that often happens. We focus our mind on a small goal, and our mind expands unlimitedly within that goal, and that small goal appears to be the goal of life. So getting a house, decorating the house, getting the money to get the house, our mind becomes compressed. And forgetting everything, forgetting real life, forgetting what else is going on in the world, forgetting that we're going to get old and die, that little goal, we focus our mind on that, and it becomes everything for us. And our life revolves around that. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. As originally mentioned, a poor man belonging to the mercantile community goes to the forest to get some cheap goods to bring back to the city to sell at a profit. He is so absorbed in the thought of maintaining body and soul together that he forgets his original relationship with Krishna and seeks only the bodily comforts. Thus, material activities are the conditioned soul's only engagement. Not knowing the aim of life, the materialist perpetually wanders in material existence, struggling to get the necessities of life. Not understanding the aim of life, even though he acquires sufficient necessities, he manufactures artificial necessities. This is what happens. Even though he requires sufficient necessities, the next step is, when that's done, manufacture artificial necessities, and thus become more and more entangled. He creates a mental situation whereby he needs greater and greater and greater and greater and greater comfort and convenience. Text 9. And therefore one's whole life again is wasted. Sometimes, as if blinded by a dust of a whirlwind, the conditioned soul sees the beauty of the opposite sex, which is called pramada. Being thus bewildered, he is raised upon the lap of a woman, or a woman upon a man, and at that time his good senses are overcome by the force of passion. He thus becomes almost blind with lusty desire and disobeys the rules and regulations governing sex life. He does not know that his disobedience is witnessed by different demigods, and he enjoys illicit sex in the dead of night, not seeing the future punishment awaiting him. So all wrong done is witnessed. Future suffering awaits us for the wrong done, and no one can avoid the suffering that comes to one due to his sinful actions. Those sinful reactions cannot be avoided. That is Krishna's law. So specifically, illicit sex life is condemned here, and therefore one should avoid passion. When one gets enwrapped in passion like that, one loses all sense. Dayato Vishaya Pungsam Sangas. A court, lost, controlled, whipped by passion, whipped by greed. Such suffering. Text 10. The conditioned soul sometimes personally appreciates the futility of sense enjoyment in the material world. And he sometimes considers material enjoyment to be full of miseries. So you try and you try and you try and then it's just not worth it. It's miserable. Material world is miserable. However, due to his strong bodily conception, his memory is destroyed. And again he runs after material enjoyment, just as an animal runs after a mirage in the desert. Purport. The main disease in material life is the bodily conception. Being baffled again and again in material activity, the conditioned soul temporarily thinks of the futility, the uselessness of material enjoyment. But he again tries the same thing. By the association of devotees, a person may become convinced of the material futility, but he cannot give up his engagement, although he is very eager to return home back to Godhead. Under these circumstances, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, compassionately takes away all the material possessions of such a devotee. So this is how Krishna deals with devotees who are trapped with their material desires, unable to give them up, but yet truly desiring to serve Krishna. They're in a contradictory position, and Krishna ends up wrecking their material life. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 88th chapter, Yasyaham anugrahami harishya tadanam sanai. Lord Krishna says that he takes everything away from the devotee whom he especially favors when that devotee is overly attached to material possessions. When everything is taken away, the devotee feels helpless and frustrated in society, friendship, and love. He feels that his family does not care for him any longer, and he therefore completely surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. There is the story in the 11th canto of Avanti Brahmana, who was very wealthy, but he was very miserly, and he wouldn't spend any of his wealth, and his family members didn't like him at all because they naturally wanted to use his wealth. So eventually, through taxes, through the government, through this and that, he lost all his money. And then his family members kicked him out, they threw him in the street, everyone laughed at him, and he was so miserable until he understood that this was actually Krishna, and he took shelter of Krishna, and then he was actually happy. And then whatever happened to him externally, he was beyond that, the external, because he was situated deeply internally in Krishna consciousness. So that disappointment, the misery of material life, became practically the door that he walked through. He understood the nature of material life. And he understood, in comparison, the firm shelter of spiritual life, of the spiritual truth. And he became fixed in that. Paratmanishtam. So he completely surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So that taking away of everything is a special favor granted by the Lord to a devotee who cannot fully surrender to the Lord due to a strong bodily conception. As explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ami vigya e mokke vishaya keni diva. The Lord understands the devotee who hesitates to engage in the Lord's service, not knowing whether he should again try to revive his material life. After repeated attempts and failures, he fully surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord then gives him directions, and attaining happiness, he forgets all his material engagement. Text 11. Sometimes the conditioned soul is very aggrieved by the chastisement of his enemies and government servants who use harsh words against him directly or indirectly. At that time his heart and ears become very saddened. Such chastisement may be compared to the sounds of owls and crickets. Due to his pious activities in previous lives, the conditioned soul attains material facilities in this life. But when they are finished, he takes shelter of wealth and riches, which cannot help him in this life or the next. Because of this, he approaches the living dead who possess these things. He wants these things, and he approaches the living dead. That means the wealthy people who are really dead spiritually. You have to beg from them and somehow placate them so they'll give you what you want. Such people are compared to impure trees, creepers, and poisonous wells. Sometimes, to mitigate distress in this forest of the material world, the conditioned soul receives cheap blessings from atheists. He then loses all intelligence in their association. This is exactly like jumping in a shallow river. As a result, one simply breaks his head. He is not able to mitigate his suffering from the heat, and in both ways he suffers. The misguided conditioned soul who approaches so-called sadhus and swamis who preach against the principles of the Vedas, he does not receive benefit from them either in the present or in the future. Prabhupada explains in his purport in the second half. As mentioned before, the color of gold is compared to the will-o'-the-wisp or yellow stool. Therefore, one should not be allured by gold manufacturing gurus, but should sincerely approach a devotee like Jadabharat. Jadabharat instructed Maharaj Rahugana so well that the king was relieved from the bodily conception. One cannot become happy by accepting a false guru. A guru should be accepted as advised in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyaita Gigya Sosreya Uttamam. One should approach a bona fide guru to inquire about the highest benefit of life. Such a guru is described as follows: Sabde Pare Chanishnatam. Such a guru does not manufacture gold or juggle words. He is well versed in the conclusions of Vedic knowledge, Vedischa Savaraham Eva Vidya. He is freed from all material contamination and is fully engaged in Krishna service. If one is able to obtain the dust of the lotus feet of such a guru, his life becomes successful. Otherwise he is baffled both in this life and the next. 14. In this material world, when the conditioned soul cannot arrange for his own maintenance, despite exploiting others, he tries to exploit his own father or son, taking away that relative's possessions, although they may be very insignificant. If he cannot acquire things from his father, son, or other relatives, he is prepared to give them all kinds of trouble. Purport. Prabhupada explains, once we actually saw a distressed man steal ornaments from his daughter just to maintain himself. As the English proverb goes, necessity knows no law. When a conditioned soul needs something, he forgets his relationship with his relatives and exploits his own father or son. We also receive information from Bhagavatam that in this age of Kali, the time is quickly approaching when a relative will kill another relative for a small farthing. Without Krishna consciousness, people will deteriorate further and further into a hellish condition wherein they will perform abominable acts. And the final verse we'll read. In this world, family life is exactly like a blazing fire in the forest. There is not the least happiness, and gradually one becomes more and more implicated in unhappiness. In household life, there is nothing favorable for perpetual happiness. Being implicated in home life, the conditioned soul is burned by the fire of lamentation. Sometimes he condemns himself as being very unfortunate, and sometimes he claims that he suffers because he performed no pious activities in his previous life. Prabhupada's purport is short, and we'll read it. In the Guru Vastaka, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has sung, Samsara Dava Nalalita Loka Tranaya Karuna Kanaganatyam. A life in this material world is exactly like a blazing forest fire. No one goes to set fire in the forest, yet the fire takes place. Similarly, everyone wants to be happy in the material world, but the miserable condition of material life, the miserable conditions of material life, simply increase. Sometimes a person caught in the blazing fire of material existence condemns himself, but due to his bodily conception, he cannot get out of the entanglement, and thus he suffers more and more. So, all this is being explained, so we develop a detachment, so we can gain an attachment to Krishna, that we seek the shelter of Krishna, and not seek shelter, and not seek happiness where it does not exist in the material world. Okay, thank you very much. There's three classes on this. I think there'll be three classes. And they may be fairly long, so we don't really have time for questions now. So on Wednesday, Krishna willing, we'll meet again. And Thursday and Friday we'll have classes. And then the next week is the conscious living, right?